You recently did an event, a workshop. Could you tell me a little bit about the purpose of that and what that was for?
Sure. So this is the fifth of a series of workshops on fishing families in Alaska communities and how they've been affected by changing conditions. Everything from environmental changes to kind of broader socioeconomic conditions and a lot about regulatory changes and how families have been affected by those.
Okay, and you're employed by NIMFS?
That's right. I'm employed by the National Marine Fisheries Service.
Okay, could you tell me a little bit about how you guys came together, how you ended up in their employment?
Sure. So I was doing a PhD in marine policy, and I applied for a grant through the National Marine Fisheries Service to get additional funding for my PhD, and also to have an advisor from NIMFS, and that's kind of how my connection to Alaska Fisheries Science Center got going. I came up to Juneau for the summer, and I just fell in love with Alaska instantly, and I decided to move my dissertation towards examining impacts of the IFQ program. And so I started a long relationship with the Alaska Fisheries Science Center and have been working with social scientists and economists there for several years on various projects, and eventually ended up getting a kind of my dream job.
So I work with fisheries in this context. I'm in the context of radio, where I'm covering things that people like you are doing and things that are affecting fishermen. And like I said at the meeting, I fished probably five times with ambitions to fish more. So I've become really interested in fisheries because of that. How is it that you got into fisheries?
Yeah, so that's kind of an interesting story. My family is from Gdańsk, which is on the Baltic Sea in Poland. So I spent the first couple of years of my life there, and a lot of my of who I think I am was kind of born of that experience and watching the fishing boats on the Baltic, and also understanding the impacts on communities from environmental stresses and how that can really deplete fishing communities, and the way that the community interacts with fisheries, and how it, kind of gets at a lot of things like culinary traditions and the integration of those traditions to spirituality and cultural heritage, and how that you can lose that, over the course of a generation when the loss of fisheries becomes real to you.
When you say environmental, what do you mean?
Yeah, for specifically in the Baltic, that was environmental stresses in terms of eutrophication. So you had a lot of bad things going into the water and causing essentially a pollution and the inability of species to really survive in that atmosphere.
How long were you in Poland?
We emigrated when I was seven.
Okay.
Yeah.
To where?
To the East Coast.
Oh,
So,
yeah, where?
right outside of Philadelphia.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
What was it like growing up in Philadelphia after Poland?
Oh, very different. So when I moved in the early 90s, Poland was still under kind of the vestiges of the Soviet Union, and capitalism was not really part of the program. And I moved to the East Coast, where everything was developed, and I remember the drive from the airport to our home in outside of Philly, and having a 4-lane highway was really unique to me. And billboards and flashing lights, that was all very different. Yeah, the life was completely different, and a lot of that was for me a a loss of a connection to wilderness, which I did have in Poland, and I didn't have that on the East Coast, and I didn't get that back until I moved up here to Alaska.
I can see why you would like Alaska for that reason. I mean, I grew up in New York City, so I'm also kind of familiar with a very purposeful nature. Mm-hmm. And here you finally get to be around trees that kind of popped up mostly by themselves, mostly. So that was refreshing for me too. And so you mentioned that you have some familiarity with fisheries when you were in Poland. So where was that connection in the States?
It's funny. I'm not sure, you know, what was driving me all those years, but when I was doing my my master's, I thought about continuing into fisheries. I got kind of an environmental policy master's, and then I worked at the EPA for a few years, and I just kind of retained this fascination with fisheries as really kind of a unique way that people still interact with the environment. You know, it's kind of one of the last ways in which humans are really subject to the whims of nature. And that in itself really fascinated me. And so I was working at the EPA and just decided I want to, you know, study fisheries. That's really kind of where my heart lies. And I did a PhD program at the University of Delaware and was initially studying fisheries management in New England. And then when I came up here to, well, up to Juneau for a summer, kind of on a whim because of a friend of mine who was in the same PhD program as me was from Juneau and allowed me a place to stay. And I came up and I completely switched my dissertation topic over so that I could essentially be in Alaska. Yeah.
And you're working on a really interesting project. This is a chance to hear what fishing families have experienced and what elements are affecting the next generation, which is something that people in radio, in fisheries radio, are really interested in, at least I am. How did this project begin for you?
Well, it was kind of the nexus of doing the IFQ review. So I, along with Sarah Marinin at the North Pacific Council, we wrote the 20-year review of the halibut and sablefish IFQ program. And during the course of that, we held a crew workshop. And one of the attendees talked about how the implementation of the program and the resultant prolongation of the fishing season meant that she could no longer participate because it conflicted with her responsibilities as a mom. She couldn't be away from her kids for that long. And then a few months later, I had a baby and I realized how much your life changes as a result. And I thought a lot about heritage and what I wanted to pass down to my child. And that those two things, the kind of impacts that were specific to this female participant from a management change in fisheries and the desire to pass on a cultural heritage to your children, that really kind of drove this topic for me. And it's something that I think comes up again and again across these workshops in terms of families wanting and struggling to pass on the heritage of fishing.
And I got the chance to sit in on one of the workshops you held. It was great hearing what people had to say about their families, and I was impressed with the thoughtfulness that they showed and they shared, and I was impressed with how you handled some of the more controversial statements. How do you go into communities and encourage people to share with you, especially when there's some trepidation surrounding the council and regulatory forces?
Yeah, I think, you know, the biggest thing for me is I hope I come off as genuine. You know, that I understand that the need and desire to kind of sustain traditions across generations and across communities. And I think that, you know, people are interested in this topic because it really gets to their heart. And I think that these workshops provide a forum for them to tell their story and in a way that maybe they don't really get to think about that much. You know, I have that, you know, an exercise during the workshop where I give them a kind of a timeline of events over the course of, you know, the last 100+ years. And I always get kind of a positive response to that exercise in terms of people being able to step back and think about, you know, what was that like for my family? And what was that like for me? And where am I now? And where are my children now? And I think that that's why people are willing to come and show up, because it's so true to who they are.
How did you manage to pin down all the complicated aspects of the fisheries? Because some of the things that they were saying at the meeting, at the workshop, they were referring to things that you wouldn't really understand unless you had kind of internal, you had an internal view of what they were talking about. So like privatization and how that affected the villages and caused people to sell their quota. So at what point did you feel that you had a handle enough on fisheries to talk to fishing families and talk to people?
Oh, yeah, I think, you know, that it does take a few years. And I think that co-authoring the IFQ program review really helped at that, because we looked across the various objectives for that program, many of which speak to protecting communities and affording entry opportunities. And that exposure really allowed me to think kind of holistically about management impacts and what they mean for individuals and communities. But I also think, you know, I started these workshops last June, and I've certainly been learning as I go through that process, and learning, I guess, what I may be able to expect from participants, because, like I said, some of these themes are really recurring. But I think there are things that are specific to communities as well that are, you know, kind of different in terms of the fisheries that they participate in and how specific changes within those fisheries affect them.
Could you talk a little bit about the themes and the commonalities you saw between communities? Because you've been to Juneau and where else?
Juneau, Homer, Sitka, Anchorage, and now Kodiak. Yeah, so there are themes that kind of come across all three of the kind of major topics that we cover. So the first theme of the workshop is to discuss, you know, what is a fishing family? I kind of like to hear from people, you know, I call this a fishing families workshop. Why did you show up? And I think a lot of the things that I hear from people are really similar in terms of, you know, first, I almost always invariably hear the livelihood, and then we kind of instantly move on. Because it's almost a given, but it's also because I think a lot of the fishing that's different, it's about a livelihood for people. It's about a sense of identity, a sense of creating a work ethic within their children. And so those are a lot of the common themes that come out from that first discussion topic. Then as far as management impacts, we hear a lot about losses of opportunities for participation, losses in terms of a buffer. So before, you know, what some people call privatization, other people call rationalization, but essentially the limited entry and catch share programs that we've kind of had coming into Alaska fisheries over time, people used to be able to adjust to losses in any one fishery by moving into a different fishery and whenever the next season opened up. So if you had a bad herring fishery, herring season, you'd go into salmon and you'd try to make up the losses there. You'd try to, get a halibut opener and so on. But with these programs, those opportunities have really kind of been narrowed down. And part of what we hear that kind of unfolds from that is increasing uncertainties within families, increasing stress, and the kind of domino effects that might have on a family. I almost always hear about divorces, the kind of brought up and not necessarily gotten into at the workshops, but it comes up. But then also, kind of the flip side of that, as came up yesterday, is the certainty that's afforded by these programs in terms of people being able to plan around their harvests for those who were given an allocation into the program. So one of the big themes in terms of impacts is these kind of management changes and what they do to the family unit.
The term privatization, does that have a negative connotation?
I think in Alaska, it certainly does. At least at my workshops, I get the sense that it has a negative connotation. People might use rationalization instead as a word that has more of a positive connotation with respect to the same kind of management framework.
I suppose that's something that you factor into your studies, how people perceive or define terms or what terms they choose to use?
Sure, yeah. And yeah, that's a big, component of how we do social science. To the extent possible, I kind of leave the door open for people to speak to whatever they want. I try to use as few trigger questions or any kind of body language that would, indicate that I have any kind of subjectivity on whatever we're talking about. So people definitely, have thought a lot about these issues and how it's impacted them. And so they'll use specific terms that feel like they are true to them.
Some of the themes or some of the tensions I saw that night, and maybe you agree or you don't agree, some tension between gear type was something I saw here in Kodiak. Also, concern about the future of the industry for future generations. As far as the tension between gear types, which kind of became evident, there are some stakeholders on each side. Is that something that you see a lot in the communities?
It's not something that we see that much. It's certainly something I expected in Kodiak. Kodiak is a little bit unique in terms of the diversity of the fleet that operates here and how they kind of interact and essentially how they kind of interact over allocation. So that's a little bit different than the kind of other communities that I've gone out to. But it was certainly something that I thought I would hear at this workshop.
And something else someone brought up at the table I was at, they were talking about how they believe the future is with factory boats. What have you heard from people about where they think the future of fisheries lies?
Yeah, that's a really interesting topic. I think that, you hear a lot from the young people about this kind of closure of opportunities. And also, I think one of the interesting things is about this break between how you learn traditionally from your family about how you can kind of move up in fisheries, and then the reality of that right now. So, you know, a lot of young participants at these workshops talk about how their parents were able to kind of move up in the fisheries and get permits and participate across fisheries over time, but those opportunities are not afforded to them anymore. And so there's this kind of break in terms of, you know, what they've seen their parents be able to do and what they can do themselves. And so there's kind of just this intergenerational difference in what, you know, people can do in fisheries. And as far as participation in on factory boats, you know, I haven't heard that as much as the notion that we also heard at the Kodiak workshop, which is people telling their kids to go to college and to get jobs outside of fishing and then to maybe participate in fisheries part-time because they're struggling to see a future for their kids in terms of being able to make a living just off of participating in fisheries.
That's pretty common, I feel, or at least I've seen from the few college students I know who are Alaskan is spending summers fishing or spending a break fishing or something along those lines, or maybe working for EDF&G possibly. Is that something that people see more now?
That's certainly something that they're saying at the workshop is kind of increasingly part of how they manage to stay within fisheries, is that they're essentially diversifying their household income. So I think a few people at the workshop were also talking about how, you know, they've picked up shoreside jobs to try to maintain health insurance for their family and to provide some stability in the face of, you know, fluctuating runs and stocks and price changes. So it comes up as kind of a way in which families are adapting to changing conditions. Yeah.
Something else that I've heard a lot about is the graying of the fleet. The term that kind of refers to a lot of the participants in fisheries being a little bit older and fewer younger people trying to get involved. What are some of the barriers to entry that you've heard people across the state have experienced?
Sure. Well, the, you know, limited entry and catch share programs and rising permit costs and quota share prices associated with those programs, and people talk about how they just simply can't afford to buy into new fisheries. You also hear about costs being driven up in terms of fuel, in terms of insurance, regulations from both the Coast Guard and NIMS kind of driving up other costs in terms of kind of accommodating those regulations. Yeah, I guess I would say those are kind of the biggest barriers to entry that I've heard about.
And you said you did a 20-year review of the IFQ program?
As part of the IFQ program review, we just reviewed, you know, how people have entered the fisheries, how many people have entered the fisheries, and how much quota share do they hold. And then we also spoke to lenders to hear about, you know, how do they make decisions about making loans for quota share purchases. And one of the things that that we heard there is, at least for some of them, they are concerned about decreasing tax in the fisheries, and that people will essentially default on their loans and not be able to pay them back because the quota share prices are so high.
So you've visited a few communities so far and gotten to speak to some of the residents there. Where is all this information going?
Yeah, so we're essentially kind of trying to do two things here. So one of the things that we're interested in is thinking about, are there areas that are coming up that we need to look more into, from that are emerging from these workshops? And then the other thing we're trying to do is look across these communities and the various fleets that participate in fisheries across these communities. And are there major themes that are coming up in terms of both how people identify themselves and how they have been affected by changes in Alaska's fisheries? And essentially, I guess I envision this as creating a body of knowledge that can inform the management process.
So what's the future for the research that you're doing or for this particular project?
Yeah, so I thought Kodiak would be my last workshop and then I could summarize the themes, but there is really a lot of interest to kind of continue these workshops. So I'm considering going to other communities to the extent that I have funding to do so, and to, you know, keep hearing from folks about, you know, how they've been affected by changes. And then when the workshops are done, like I said, we're going to take all these themes that are emerging and create a document on, you know, the kind of universal impacts that we've seen and how they're tied, to the extent possible, how they're tied to management changes that, you know, we make decisions about.
Why do you think the research you're doing has gotten so much interest?
Yeah, I think it really, you know, it speaks to the heart of people. I think it, you know, people think about who their grandparents were and who they are and who they want their children to be. And I think they're showing up at these workshops to make sure that, you know, they had a shot at telling their story and they had a shot at, you know, affecting the information that we have about, you know, how changes affect fishing families and fishing communities.